And hello, good people of the internet. It is I, Tommy Kelly. This is Adventures in Woo-Woo. This episode, we're going to be doing some question and answers given to me. The questions were given to me. The answers will be provided by me. But the questions were given to me by the wonderful people over on Patreon and the wonderful people over on Discord. So, I'll get into them now in a second. Just for the people who care about this sort of thing, back in the Osmo Pocket, still debating whether to get the Osmo Pocket 2. There's a couple of great factors in it. Upgrades that would be really good. The wider lens would be very helpful for kind of outdoor vlogs, you know, the walkie-talkie type things. And also that wireless microphone thing would be quite helpful. But we'll see. The downside of the Osmo is, of course, that it splits up the files. And so you have to edit them afterwards. Unlike if you use like the DSLR, that it just comes out as one big file. But DSLR has a 20-minute limit, so it doesn't really work with things when you have to do a lot of questions, you know, something over a longer period. Anyway, let's get to these. So, Tyrone Jameson, I was thinking about how the saint, the messenger, and the dead could be used as a combo in ancestor work, the dead saints, divine powers, particularly on holy grounds, temples, churches, and to dates in the past, etc. For example, the protector can be sent to future events. Why not past ones? I would imagine that magic is not confined to the same time constraints we are. What are your thoughts? I quite imagine that is equally true. And time seems to be definitely a construct of, if not our brains or our awareness, or if certainly something of this universe or this kind of creation that is possibly doesn't exist outside it. Like, I mean, that's, you know, so we can guess, so it seems, so it can, you know, it would logically kind of follow that way. But who knows? Like, we're within time. Our only experience is time. And so everything has to be guessed. So it does kind of feel sometimes, there definitely is that sense that things are happening at the same time rather than things happening in sequence possibly, but at the same time. It's very hard to describe. And if you've had that experience of everything kind of being one moment, then you know what I'm on with. Again, it just could be something weird that our brains do. Abraxas, what's the most unexplainable woo experience you've had? I haven't had any crazy woo stories really compared to some people who have had some really, you know, bizarre stuff happen to them. I suppose that one of the star exploding that lit up the night sky that I even now have absolutely normalized in my brain that there was something, but, you know, that it was normal, that it wasn't something that extraordinary or that it might be explainable. But I try to hold on to that one because that is the one thing I've definitely seen in my life that I would consider a miraculous event, because I have no idea how that would have happened. And it was as if it was just for me to see, and only occurred because I was on my own. It's like these kind of ideas of, you know, your synchronicities or your nods and wink from the universe. They're only given insofar as it doesn't give the whole game away. That seems to be part of the rules, that it can't, you know, can't show its entire hand, give you a glimpse at the first three cards. So, that seeing things on your own, you know, because if I've seen that with someone else, say I've seen that with, you know, a skeptical person or something like that, that would possibly change their kind of worldview or something, because it was so miraculous in a sense. But there on my own, you know, you've no one to kind of compare notes with. You're left to your own kind of devices, your own kind of outlook on it. And the thing I've talked about a million times, about the Anton LaVey thing, of that if you don't acknowledge the magic, then you lose the magic. And that's your brain's normalization of these miraculous events. So I would say that I probably have more interesting, more kind of woo porn events that have happened that'd be more interesting to other people, and, you know, in a more kind of conventional sense of probably what most people ask when they ask that question. But that is my answer, is the star exploding, which was, I should probably explain it for people who haven't heard it. I was just outside one night, and back when I was smoking. So I was smoking outside and looking up at the stars, as is my wont, as I love to do. And the biggest explosion of a star, like, lit up the entire night sky. It was perfectly symmetrical. It was definitely not a firework. There was no sound attached to it. It was extremely bright. It was very, very close. But not, you know, not again, not, I don't have to justify myself. It wasn't a firework. Anyway, yeah, so that was just something as if that felt like something was looking at me and showing itself. Merrily Duffy, what's your favourite film or films and why? I have any amount of favourite films. The film I've probably seen the most in my life is Seven. I really love that film. I just love the direction and the kind of the colour grading that Fincher has in it. And just the whole thing just really lays out well. I remember it, seeing it in the cinema and being very quite unsure if I enjoyed it or not for a long while after, for days maybe afterwards. Really enjoyed that. Other films I like, I love Inception. I think that doesn't get talked about enough in kind of occult circles. Obviously, The Matrix kind of changed the world in many ways, particularly, well, definitely changed film world, but it changed the New Age movement as well. The Ninth Gate is my one of my favorite films, a film I love to watch, but it's not a great film, and the book's just okay too. The book's actually not great, actually at all. But it's re I really like it, and if you're into the occult and you're into books, then why wouldn't you like it? You know, it's a cheesy horror film that ticks all the boxes. Signs is my Halloween movie of choice. It's my favorite horror movie. One of the very few films that actually, when I seen it, made me not quite scared, but apprehensive or give me anxiety. Whereas if you've any sort of idea of, story structure, or you've seen enough horror films, you know where everything's coming from. You can see the jump scares are signposted nearly a million miles away. But in this one, I generally got a sense of anxiety, particularly that famous scene of the home video at the kids' birthday party, which doesn't have the impact now because we've seen it and it's been spoofed about and stuff. But very first time I seen that when, I knew nothing about it. Just my cousin, he just says, just come to this. Don't watch anything, don't know anything about it, just come. Because I hadn't seen Sixth Sense, which was M. Night Shyamalan-lang-lang-lang-lang-ding-dong's previous film, because someone had spoiled the ending for me and I just didn't see the point in it. I think Signs is maybe Unbreakable is the in between. I hadn't seen it either. So moving on to the Discord, there's loads of other films I could talk all day. Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, great film. I don't know. That, depending on the day you ask me, Seven Samurai. What a wonderful film. And then, Kira, loads of things, loads and loads and loads of things. Harry wants to know, have you ever really been far, even as decided to use, to even go, want to do, look more like? And I have, I have, yeah, that's the best. Internet memes, aren't they wonderful? Second question, if you could spend an hour with anyone in history, who would you pick? There's a number of, I suppose, people that you would like to spend an hour with, but you'd like to spend an hour with Crowley, but like, would he tell you anything? That's the thing. Like, you would have to have a contract. I'm going to spend an hour with Crowley. You're not trying to, you can't do anything weird to me. You can't slip me some drugs or whatever is his want. But if he's going to teach you for an hour about stuff, or you have a question and answer session, but I'm fine. Then I suppose you could, semi-mythical creatures like Jesus, that would be an interesting hour. Number one, to see if, what the actual man was like, if there was a man, and or even Buddha or something, or Buddha as he's often pronounced. That would be an interesting one, an hour with the Buddha, or one of these great masters of previous times. And you could, like spend an hour with George Harrison or something like that too. It depends, what mood I'm in when this contract that allows me to transverse time and space is presented to me. But it's a good question, an interesting one. Actual answer will be, it depends. Traveller, what's the most fulfilling thing you've accomplished with magic? I would say the most fulfilling thing I've ever accomplished is Dem, my hyper-sigillic comic. In that it worked entirely perfectly as I wanted it, and it's a piece of art that I'm intensely proud of, warts and all. I'm not saying it's perfection in all forms, but it's exactly what I wanted to be, on all levels, on a kind of creative, an expressive, an artistic, and a magic level. And yeah, so that was definitely the most fulfilling thing, given that halfway through it, when I was in the middle of the kind of hyper sigilness of it, it felt like it hadn't worked and it was a failure and that my life had fallen apart and all of these things, which completely forgetting the fact that that was it's in the book. It's in the actual Hyper Sigil. That is was part of it, and I didn't realize it because I was too buried within it. But yeah, very fulfilling to see then lately. Like even on the blog, I talk about how it was a failed Hyper Sigil, and then had to add a further blog post to it to go, yeah, I wasn't seeing that. Wasn't seeing the entirety of it yet. Joe Morita, what's the ritual you have sticked to the longest, and what were your experiences with it? The boring answer to that is meditation. I've sticked with the longest, and I have an up and down relation with meditation. In that, I used to say the only thing I get out of meditation is a sore back, but I don't do the posture, the sitting posture anymore. I do a kind of a lying down posture that is kind of semi incubation, a la Peter Kingsley or the Magia stuff. Unbinding practices from Alan Chapman. But I don't really think that's the question you're asking me. Meditation recently has been quite good, but it's still up and down. And it's an ongoing process, as anyone who meditates knows. I did an awful lot of different things over a long period. I did like the lesser banishing ritual at Pentagram for a long while. We recently did the Star Ruby for 30 days straight. I did stuff where I did, you know, the daily planetary prayers that Gordon Runesoup, suggests to do, the demo over a long period. I found that none of these things were really that helpful. They didn't increase my creativity, didn't increase my level of magic, they didn't suddenly increase the number of synchronicities. Gordon talks about, you know, being moved around the board, that kind of analogy thing, and I didn't find that. And it wasn't that I did it for a week, like I was doing, these things were over periods of months. Maybe need to do them for years for it to be successful. But the way people talk about them, they've kind of, if people are to be believed, of course, they talk about kind of seeing the effect of these things very immediately. I didn't. And then it just seemed like extra work, homework, adding more chores to your day for no kind of added benefit. So, although the Star Ruby for 30 days was very good, did kind of drain me by the end of it. So, I felt very drained at the end of whether it was the cause or just a correlation. Funky Pumpkin, how's your journey with Pan going? Are things going the same as you envisioned? Different, maybe, or a bit of both? The thing with Pan, and the thing with an awful lot of these kind of excursions, is that they seem to have a momentum, a tremendous amount of momentum, building towards some sort of perceived payoff or some sort of end thing where you'll go, this was the reason why we were doing this. And as usual, I've talked about this in the podcast with Spud as well, in one of the episodes, that it just kind of fizzles out, all of these things, and it just ends up feeling kind of pointless and stuff like that. So with Pan, there is that kind of notion that that kind of happened, that it just kind of fizzled out. But there was also he could have just been about just to get me back into music, which I very much did do. So if I wanted to point to working with Pan, the flute player, the Pan pipe man, the music man, and now I'm, I play piano every day, I play guitar every day, I'm writing songs, I'm recording songs and all those things, which I hadn't been doing in years before. So that definitely happened. But it's this kind of feeling that there was something more to it, which maybe I was just injecting into it, and maybe I was looking for a bit, something more, or maybe it was part of this thing that I kind of found with my HGA thing, is that maybe it's just another thing on the path you're just meant to ignore, like the cities when they arise, which are the magical powers you get from meditation. You're meant to just ignore them, not use them, that they're another illusion or another thing along the path. So maybe I just got caught up in another kind of state chasing mode of, more of looking for something external, God, please help me, or something, like that. But but the music thing, that definitely happened. And so that alone was worth hanging out with Pan. It's a great statue of him over there. And of course, Pan was in the Star Ruby as well. So there were still kind of elements. I haven't read that Pan book yet, because just I've been doing this online retreat with the Magia stuff for Alan Chapman. And there's a lot of reading involved in that. So I just haven't had time, but I will read it. Jason, the topic of liminal spaces has come up a lot recently, and you've even brought it up in your recent comic. What's your favourite liminal space to visit? specifically real places, not liminal states, states of mind. And there is a river close enough to us where we live called the Boyne, which is quite a famous river. And there is a walk in Slane. Now, you people might be aware of Slane, Slane Castle. There's lots of gigs and stuff that's happened there. But there, it's just close to that, but you know, it's not part of their grounds. That has a certain kind of a section of the river. It's kind of a tributary of it. There used to be an old kind of canal or boat kind of dock, and it has what seems like stagnant water, but it's not, because it's very fast flowing, because it ends up as a kind of a waterfall. But it has all this lovely green algae kind of resting on the top, and it's extremely magical. There's a kind of a cave or an old bridge or something that you can go. I've done a couple of videos in that place, and that certainly has the feeling of a liminal spot. Possibly the most liminal spot I've ever been in my life, and it might be a mental state thing, so it might not quite fit, was my garden shed growing up. And I used to spend just time just sitting there, and I was in a kind of a meditative kind of practice, just being on my own, and have memories of like the door being slightly open and the rain outside, and feeling kind of that whole thing of being in two different worlds. So that's kind of the definition, I suppose, of liminal space. But as I said, that might be a meditative space rather than my garden shed being a portal to the other world or something. Abraxas, what are your thoughts on free will and how far does it extend? Man, I spent 3 years looking at this one. I don't know. I mean, that thing in the Matrix, the second Matrix movie, where the Oracle is talking to Neo and it gives that kind of suggestion that you're not here to make decisions, you're not here to make choices, you're here to understand why those choices were made. And that kind of stuck with me, and it's... Peter Kingsley says similar things in reality, where you have, you know, everything is kind of predestined and pre-chosen, and you're here to, in a sense, experience. So Alan Chapman says that that's not really what he's saying, even though the words on the page, that is what he's saying. But he reckons he's pointing to something else, which is that kind of thing from Murgia, where that... the test of fate, say, is only a test in so much as you fail it, but it's not a test once you say yes, because then as soon as you say yes to fate, you realise that it wasn't a test. I do genuinely think that Peter Kingsley is not saying that in reality, and that that he is suggesting that there is a predetermination, or you have no free will as it is. And obviously, I don't like that idea in some ways, and I do like that idea in some ways. It means that I'm not responsible for all the shitty things, in one sense, that I've done, or it kind of alleviates some of the shitty things that have been done to me, in that if no one has any say in any of this and we are just experiencing it, it kind of takes a bit of the blame away from it. I don't like it for the same reason that it takes some of the blame away from it. It kind of gives, you know, carte blanche to people to have done terrible things, and you kind of go, you know, they're getting into spiritual bypassing territory of that, of saying that, you know, it's all an illusion anyway. I don't know. And as Serendipity said after, it says, how can we know? And ultimately, does it matter? Because we act like we have it. We engage with the world like we have free will. Whether or not we have it is possibly incidental. Although it could be a good respite from the constant worry and the constant guilt that comes along with life. Jason again. What's your thoughts on the relationship between music and magic? Music can cause change in people, putting them into different emotional states, or reinforce a specific emotional state. Do you use music when performing any magic? I do. I have a particular, two particular pieces of music that I use when I'm doing any sort of ritual. One of them is Arvo Pärt, or Part, whatever way his name, Pärt, not Pärt, Part, is it? Arvo Pärt, his Creator Spiritus album. And I think it's the song Jerusalem in particular that I have on repeat. The other is the music from Satanus, the Anton LaVey Church of Satan movie from the 60s. It's just kind of organ music, and it's very... it's kind of like the epitome of what you would think of cheesy ritual music. But, it gets me into the state or whatever. Regarding music, I think music is the highest form of magic, by far, unquestionably. It's the thing that, and I've spoke about this going that, you know, on the podcast with Spoden, recently on another podcast that'll be out soon, that there's probably a lot of things that if an alien came down to this earth and had a look at and seen that we think are quite normal but are extremely bizarre, and I assume music would be that, in that it's something that is so embedded in us and is so all around and all pervading and, you know, ubiquitous and all that kind of stuff, that we don't realize just how unbelievably magic and weird music is, and how it's like touches to the absolute core of people or to the soul of people, or, you know, reaches straight into people's heart. And it's one of the most kind of things that we all have in common. It's very rare to meet someone who doesn't like music. And it might be, you know, definitely grades of, you know, how much people are into music, but everyone seems to have some sort of response to music, which they don't have to every other form of art. Like, not everyone responds to dance. You know, I can't stand looking at people dancing, you know, or I don't want to dance. Or, you know, that people have to say great paintings or books. Some people have never read a book in their lives. Your poetry, I'm not great in poetry. I find that my brain just doesn't want to, you know, look at it. It's too much. It's too much hard work or something, the poetry. So when people have said that to me about books, I go, it's too much hard work. I can understand it given my feelings around poetry. But it's music doesn't take any work. You know, it just grabs you, takes you somewhere else, points at an underlying spiritual, or whatever, I can't settle on a good word for that, but you know what I'm pointing at. It points to an underlying structure or secret or something to the universe that we can only describe in music, that we have never been able to describe as yet with words. So yeah, highest form of magic, for me anyway. IDCT321. Hey Tommy, I forgot when exactly, but I remember you talked about routine. This was on the last Q&A, I'm pretty sure, when I was out in the forest. You basically said you prefer routine over not having one, something like that, which I do. So on the opposite end of the spectrum, more or less, what do you think of randomness and disorder? Maybe a little chaos, not necessarily magic. Think of it in terms of creativity, genius, and general exploration. Yeah, I think that's important. And by routine, I don't mean stagnation. You know, it's not to kind of destroy any kind of creativity or that kind of thing, because you need new inputs, new things. And I just mean turning up on time and actually doing it. That's more what I mean, routine, that I get up out of bed at a certain time and I go to my office and I work. But what I do within that can be quite chaotic sometimes, or can be, you know, I can throw in that. I talked about it in one of the podcasts, which is the chaos magic hand grenade, where you throw in a bit of, you know, a bit of chaos into the world and see what explodes. But then that's the, you know, when it explodes, what happens? What's the fallout from that? That can be quite an interesting one to do. But yeah, and I suppose the reason I read as well, apart from looking for the secrets and looking for the answer, is in some way to kind of not have that stagnation in my mind, to try and broaden my horizons, try to, you know, have better thoughts, wider thoughts, bigger thoughts. So it's like the kind of injecting new knowledge into your brain to kind of see what the ripples are out of that. In terms of, if you are in a place of stagnation, or say creatively you have some sort of block, or your life isn't just going where you want it to be, or, you know, you're in a job you hate, or you're in a relationship you hate, or, you know, things just, you're up against a wall or something, at that point throwing in a chaos hand grenade is a great idea. But given that you have to go with the flow in that, like if you're going to throw in chaos, you have to understand you're going to get chaos, you know, and that's, you know, the point. But it's not safe. It's not, you know, it's destroying the kind of stagnation or the boundaries we've put up, or the bindings, or these kind of things. It's kind of wiping them away. And within that, you know, that brings you out of your comfort zones in many ways, but that's what you're looking for. So yeah, just for me, I like routine in the actual physicalness of it. But yeah, chaos, you know, there's no creativity without chaos. You can't make an omelet without breaking eggs, all of these things. Chariot, where do you get your ideas? Is it a subscription service? Where do you get your ideas? Alan Moore says this is the question that creative people get asked the most, And it's the question that the lampoon or the joke about the most has been a terrible question. But he reckons it's the only question. And people get uncomfortable around it because they don't know the answer. Where do I get my ideas? I get my ideas by allowing them to arrive and deciding I want to have ideas and then thinking about them. And not overthinking about them, but allowing them to conduit is the best way that I can think of, is to become a conduit and to kind of allow these things to descend or move through me or whatever it is. And the harder I try to force an idea, the harder it is. But that doesn't mean there's no work involved in it. Obviously, you have to kind of, you get the, if it was a statue, you know, you get, you're not just getting the stone, you're getting the kind of rough outline of the David within the stone, but you have to do the polishing, and that can be the work too, you know, but still to try and get yourself out of that way. Is it a subscription service? It is. Just allow it to happen. Just, you know, tune in, drop out, whatever that expression is, the Timothy Leary. Yeah, idea space, all the things. You know the answer to this, Charis. You're a creative man yourself. You know exactly where ideas come from. Crying How Bright. What for you is the biggest magic success you've had in your life? Talked about them earlier on, the Hyper Sigils. That's definitely the most magical success. I remember one time, though, which it was possibly after that, that I was doing an awful lot of ancestor work and it was going nowhere because it just didn't care about me whatsoever. And I was going through a very hard time financially, like really, you know, terrible. And I did a ritual where I called up all the ancestors and all the mighty dead and all my spirit helpers and anyone who I could think of. And I screamed at them and I got really irate and really angry and really pissed off and said, start getting your act together and sort this out for me. And within 3 days, I had a lot of money. It came in the form of work, but it came in the form of an amazing piece of work where I got to do, paid very, very well for doing a comic for a TV production studio. That, to my grave, I will say that came out of me shouting at my ancestors. So that's a fun one. Labia Facto. What's your thoughts on hypnosis? I got very into hypnosis at one point, but only in a kind of, you know, theoretical thing of it. I've never been to hypnosis, but I find it fascinating, and I definitely think there's something to it. We're all definitely under some sort of mass hypnosis, and the idea of pendulums from reality transurfing would definitely come under a kind of hypnosis type thing. Where's a good place to get into it? What do you suggest? Because I do like the idea of it, I just don't know an awful lot about it. I got more into, I suppose, hypnosis, I got more quicker. When I got into that, I started straight into, I suppose, the NLP kind of thing. Got into Richard Bandler and all these kind of people. And that gets culty very quickly. But I'm sure there is some good tech in it as well. Some of it's very fluffy and very woo and not true. But some of it, I would suggest, is good stuff. So, yeah, please let me know. Beera. Did you ever ask for something and get and then got a different, unexpected result that still made a lot of sense? Basically, I mean, does the universe mess with you too? Yes, it does. Not quite in the way you're suggesting here. Is there some irony? Well, I see what you want, but what about this thing that cleverly also covers your crest? Like when you ask for a true friend and find a puppy, or ask to find your real vocation and get fired. That stuff. Gordon White says, and I don't know if it's him who says it or he's quoting someone else, but he says magic works in the most dickish way possible. I don't find that to be true. I don't find the, you know, this whole notion of magic backfiring. I couldn't really point to any time in my life where I've done magic and it backfired in the way people talk about backfired. In that I said, you know, I want, you know, true friend and I get a puppy, like, or worse things, you know, like that the kind of one that's put up that I want money and so your auntie dies or your father dies and now you get an inheritance, that kind of backfire. And I know Gordon has definitely had ones, particularly around work, where not to tell his stories, but he had some sort of company he had set up and he was going to be like mega rich, multi-millionaire from selling this company, and all possibly those figures are hyperbolic. But he, on my part, not his part, he never talked figures. But I, and he did some magic to, you know, for the sale to go through quickly. And the sale went through quickly, but the how it went through quickly is that he got screwed out of all his money, in a sense. So so he certainly had that. Well, I've never experienced that. What I have experienced is getting the complete opposite of what I intended for. And I did a post, a blog post called "Are you getting the opposite of what you magics for?" years ago, wherein that I would enchant, say, for money, and then a huge number of bills would come in, and so I would end up with less money, and not in a kind of a learning experience, or, you know, a kind of thing that says to you, you know, the irony thing of, well, what about something that falls under this banner, but in, you know, magic working in the dickish way. It's, no, it's the actual opposite of what I asked for, in that I wanted more money, needed more money, ended up with less money. That was the end of it. You know, there was no kind of, it was like backfire because I got less money, but not in the way of I wanted money, and, you know, then my dad died, so I inherited the money, which is the kind of most people talk about the backfiring thing. Alan Chapman in Margia talks about roles and shadows, and that how these things fool you in getting or creating or manifesting or playing out the opposite of what you intended. And so I think there's something in that. I think sometimes there is a kind of a, because my solution to the whole "are you getting the opposite of what you enchanted for" was that it was possibly to do with limiting beliefs, shadow work, or, you know, the devil in the 40 servants kind of sense of those things, you know, internal stuff that's stopping you, you know, your self-worth and stuff like that. And as the Magia stuff kind of points at that as well, and that these shadows or these roles or these evil geniuses have, you know, you've made a mistake about life, or you've read it wrong, and you're now, the thing that you think you need to do to get to where you want to be is the thing that's actually causing your detriment. So I feel that has happened to me. I have more experiences of that than I do of the cheeky, ironic kind of trickstery thing that you are describing and other people describe. It's just not something that I really have experienced. So yeah, so that's that. I think I've missed a few questions here. Gultar, first question: what's the weirdest thing you've experienced except for your encounter with your HGA? Coincidence, aliens, good folk and such? Well, I've answered a kind of bit like that. The thing with the HGA is that I'm not convinced that any of these things, say the HGA stuff or the PAN stuff or any of the things that I've been involved in, aren't anything more than possibly some form of what Biro was talking about, in that kind of trickstery thing, in that it's fooling you at some way, getting you to do something that's the opposite of what you want. That kind of stuff. I haven't fully unpacked it, but I'm not sure what that is. Well, so what's my weirdest experience with it? Let me see if I can think of another one. Well, I've seen a UFO, and the people I was around when we've seen the UFO didn't care, as if it was the most nonchalant kind of everyday event that, oh, I've gone, that's a UFO, and go, yeah, that's a UFO. They were druids, in fairness to them, so it's not as if they weren't used to having weirdness going on. But the thing that always comes to mind, and one of the kind of weirdest synchronicities I've ever had, and it's so boring to say it sometimes, but it had the quality of it, which was, it caught me so surprised, was a friend I had when I was about 17 or 18, and we were, you know, drinking buddies and stuff like that, you know, getting into the kind of, I don't know, that stuff you do when you're 18 and all that. We kind of went to school together, but we didn't really kind of become friends until near the end of school. And we kind of just, you know, found two lost souls who didn't have a clue what to do. We had great fun with it, but I hadn't seen them in years. I mean years, 15 years, possibly longer. And hadn't thought about them. In fact, the kind of relationship, the way it ended up, was that I became very much more friendly with his brother, and I ended up working with his brother in the music industry. He was a roadie to my sound man. But again, I hadn't seen or thought about him in years. And for some reason, walking down the street where I am here in town, and I was coming around the corner, and I just started thinking about him. And I was just, just he came into my mind. He was there he was. And when I got around the corner, there he was. And it was like so that kind of, I don't know, it's the one kind of synchronicity that it felt. Because synchronicities are meaningful coincidences. There's some sort of meaning to it, or there's some personal type thing, rather than just I was thinking about you, and then the phone rang. There has to be some sort of quality of meaningfulness to it, and that had the most of that quality. But there was no, he'd no secret message for me. He'd no, there was no nothing that came out of that meeting, or there was no kind of, where people always talk about, oh, and this led to that, or that didn't lead anywhere. That's kind of my, I suppose that's my team or whatever. It was an interesting kind of quality to it that, again, ultimately went nowhere other than I get to tell it as a story on YouTube years later. Second question. What does your practice of devotion to Saint Cyprian look like, and how does he interact with you? He doesn't care about me whatsoever and doesn't interact with me. I spent more time, this was to answer the previous question, is what's the kind of ritual that you spent the most time doing, was my kind of trying to bother Saint Cyprian or get some sort of contact with him. I ended up going on a pilgrimage to Romania to his remains and his church, and I did all the things. Like I did, like he's in the 40 servants and in the guise of the saint. I got the statue, repainted the statue, did all the things, did loads of offerings. I've done like we do yearly offerings to the saints and stuff, that the whole kind of novenas, all of those things. And he does not care, has no interest whatsoever in any kind of interaction with me whatsoever. So he's in a box, hidden away. Not in a punishment, just in what's the point if what's the point bothering him if he's not no interest. So yeah, that's what does it look like? It looked very one-sided. That's what it looked like. It looked like I was doing all the work. Same, but I found out with the ancestor stuff I was doing, and I possibly it comes from that you're just barking up the wrong tree, or that's not the right thing for you. And I mean, the Saint Cyprian stuff mostly came out of when I was hanging around with, rune soup ideas and stuff like that. Same with the ancestor stuff. And so they're probably Gordon's ideas rather than Tommy's ideas, or that, that's Gordon's path or whatever. And I was probably trying to too much trying to latch on to that, thinking that was the path, and it's not really the path, it's just a path. Whereas someone like Ganesha or Ganesha or whatever way you want to pronounce that, it's Ganesha to me. He's just there. Don't need any of that. He was there from the first moment I became aware of him. And I very easily can describe mentally describe, or I can very easily get into the mode of understanding the qualities of Big G. I know what he feels like. I know what his presence is like. I know, in a non-woo sense, I know what the archetype is. I can understand it. I can feel it. I can work within it, and that it required no effort whatsoever. So, to the point, I suppose, then that there's that kind of Protestant work ethic going on in me, and that I kind of dismiss that, in that it doesn't feel like it's that important because there was no effort in it. And it's something I have to constantly remind myself of, that, stop seeking for, external gods when there's, I don't know if you can see, he's over there. It's my house is covered in Ganeshas. He's there and he's saying hello. He's very friendly. He's super funny. And he's a good guy. So I think that's all the questions. Although, hold on, I do think I got one from Electro Wizard. No need for anonymous. Good thing, because I've already said your name. Any big plans for this year? Well, we have, what, 6 weeks left of this year. I assume you mean this coming year. Yeah, the comic, just that's what the big plan is, that's really get into that. The Turbo Syndrome, the new chapter is about 60% done. I just have been caught up in other stuff, and I will be get better at balancing out my time, and my routine will work better. But yeah, that's what the big thing is. There's definitely going to be going to take up most of my year next year. So yeah, I think that's all the questions. If I've missed your question, my apologies. We do these every month anyway, so there's plenty of opportunity to ask me anything. And I've gone to 40 minutes. Oh my God, that's way too long. And well done to you if you've survived to the end. I hope it was worth it for you. So good people of the internet, may you have a wonderful day. May your November be fantastic. May your December be fantastic. And may next year be the best year we've ever had, ever. And we could do with it. So may our best days be ahead and be well.